Support for the Something Wild podcast comes from you, our subscribers and listeners, and from New Hampshire's farm and farmers markets, full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can find local farmers markets, farm stands, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture. And the Gundalow Company, offering summer adventure camps in Portsmouth for ages 5 to 15, exploring the region's rivers, tide pools, and shore through sailing, boat building, marine science, and art. Learn more at gundalow.org.
Hi, this is Dave Anderson from the Forest Society, and this is Something Wild. I'm with Ron Davis, who's a retired professor from the University of Maine, Orono, who has taught ecology, limnology, and wetland science for students for many years and is still involved in publication. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Well, we're going to talk today about peatlands, which is a generalized term for bogs and fens.
The difference between bogs and fens is that bogs are rather infertile environments. The plants that grow in them barely hold on and eke out an existence and grow very, very slowly. And that's because the bogs don't receive any mineral nutrients from mineral soils. They're on a thick layer of peat, and that peat isolates the surface from the underlying minerals. Consequently, they depend entirely on the content of rainwater. Fens, on the other hand, usually have shallower peat, and the water that comes to the surface and feeds the roots of the plants has been in contact with mineral soils, and consequently is generally richer, more fertile, and the plants grow better in fens.
How did these peatlands form in New Hampshire?
Well, they formed about 13 or 14,000 years ago, when the area first became deglaciated. And if they're wet places where you don't have a great deal of flow-through of water, the soils where the plants are rooted can become devoid of oxygen. And once that happens, the organic matter from the dead and dying plants starts to accumulate as peat and builds up over thousands and thousands of years, and the plants grow on the peat. And so both bogs and fens are peatlands.
And there are a number of places in New Hampshire, Quincy Bog, Panema Bog, the Great Bog, Philbrook Crescenti Bog, Mud Pond Bog in Hillsborough, that people visit. Are there fens also in New Hampshire that are renowned?
Well, these places are called bogs, but it just so happens they're really all fens. New Hampshire's peatlands are mostly fens. There are very few true bogs in the state of New Hampshire. However, when these places were named, eventually, after many decades, started appearing on U.S. Geological Survey topographic quadrangles, they all bore the name bog because that's what the early settlers and farmers and others that were living on the landscape thought of them as. However, technically, really, they're fens.
Mm-hmm. So when we think of peatlands, and I think famously people are familiar with bogs because they know that there are carnivorous plants like a pitcher plant or a sundew, but my understanding is that the flora of bogs and fens is really unique. As you said, there are few plants that can tolerate the extremes of these communities. So when you look at these peatlands, can you tell us a little bit about the plant communities that define a fen and a bog?
Now, there are only certain plants that can survive in these environments. And either they have to be living up on hummocks, which give them a little bit of oxygenated soil, or they have to have piping within their bodies that allow them to transport oxygen down to their roots. And the two groups of plants that are most common in bogs and fens are the sedges, which have this kind of tissue and can root in oxygen-free or anaerobic soil, and transport oxygen down to the roots so the roots can survive. Without oxygen, they can't survive.
Right. And there are also trees that are associated with bogs. I know famously things like black spruce and tamarack live in and around a bog mat.
Absolutely, absolutely. Black spruce is a boreal or northern species, as is tamarack or larch.
The most famous bog plant of all in New England may be cranberry, because we know that cranberries come from bogs. We were taught that.
Yes. The species of cranberry, there are two in New England, the small cranberry and the large cranberry. The large cranberry is the one that is cultivated for commerce in wet places, usually that are artificially wet and dammed and are called cranberry bogs.
Right.
And that's a very special, highly specialized place, which is not really a bog, but is simply a wetland that's created. But because cranberries grow naturally in bogs, these places have taken on the name bog.
Are there animal species, insects, birds, mammals, that you associate with peatlands in New England?
There are some birds that, most of the bird life seems to be associated mainly with the structure of the ecosystem. So open areas like fields and open peatlands will have the same species. For example, Lincoln sparrow, a palm warbler, are found in open peatlands, but also in other open environments.
Yep.
I would say in the more open peatlands of New Hampshire, you'd find not Lincoln sparrow, perhaps, but certainly palm warblers.
Yep.
You'd find white-throated sparrows in the semi-open areas, etc.
And it's an open area with insects, so it's great for hawking insects. I think of maybe bats catching insects over water, and birds are probably sally fly catching over open peatlands.
Yes, and northern harriers oftentimes would fly low over a peatland seeking out small mammals as food.
Voles.
Yes.
Right. And what about mammals? I think of moose. There's a classic, iconic North Country species, and I associate that with bogs.
Sometimes moose will walk through bogs, but they have a difficult time because they have long legs and heavy bodies, and they sink into the peat. As a matter of fact, I've had one experience when I was working in a bog, and a moose walked right next to me, about 10 feet away, didn't even notice me. And the next time I went back to that location, which happened to have a bog pool next to it, I found a drowned moose.
Oh.
It couldn't get out of the pool because of the soft footing.
Right. For insects that normally pupate or winter underground, they don't have that opportunity in bogs.
Unless they can do that in a oxygen-free environment, no. And most of the terrestrial and aerial insects, of course, can't survive the total saturation of the soil, water saturation of the soil.
And so they have to overwinter on the plants and form cocoons to get through the winter above.
Exactly. And there are many species of insects. I wish I could tell you more about them, but it's not my forte. That are herbivores on the bog plants. There are a number of rather interesting insects that do live in bogs. There are some insects that lay their eggs in pitcher plants.
Right, which is a carnivorous plant that eats or consumes, liquefies some insects, but there are mosquitoes that are adapted to survive and live within the cup of a pitcher plant.
That's true. The insects that survive in the pitcher plant and pass a portion of their life cycle and then emerge as adults from the pitcher plant are insects that are capable of living in the water during the immature stage. Insects that don't have that capacity, that chance into a pitcher plant and drown, can't survive and are digested.
Right. So I think of Little Shop of Horrors, where we have these carnivorous plants, you know, eating insects. So there is a unique flora of plants associated with these peatlands. Does the same hold true for, say, larger mammals?
Not really. The browsing mammals, like deer, don't hang out in peatlands very much. The browse is not among their favorite. The small mammals...
Snowshoe hare?
Well, snowshoe hares do hang out in peatlands. Again, that's not their favorite place. Peatlands, bogs and fens are probably, as a category, the wildest places in New Hampshire, except for the tops of mountains.
So what do you attribute that to, that they're the wildest?
They're the wildest and the least developed because it's very difficult to develop them. Even if you remove the peat, the water is there. And then, of course, in recent decades, it's been illegal to develop wetlands without some rather elaborate form of compensation. So they remain wild because they're not easily developed, and also they're not easily traversed. So many people have never visited them because it's difficult to walk in them. And that's why boardwalks have become so important in New Hampshire's wetlands.
So in a way, these bogs, by default, defied civilization because they just weren't suitable for development. And now that's been their salvation. And they're among the wildest places, as you say, and people have come to appreciate them for their own right.
Yes, they are real wild places.
Yes, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Dr. Ronald Davis is a retired professor from the University of Maine. I'm Dave Anderson. Something Wild is a joint production of New Hampshire Audubon, the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and NHPR.
New Hampshire Public Radio listeners are curious, civically minded, and digitally savvy. As an NHPR underwriter, your business or organization can connect to this statewide and engaged audience through our many podcasts, our e-newsletter, or at our award-winning news site, nhpr.org. Learn more by visiting the business support page at nhpr.org/underwrite.